Thank God that He is bringing an end to evil in this world. That statement has everything to do with the title of the sermon today, An End to Evil. This world has so much evil in it, and it has for the past 6,000 years. But as a whole, the Western world, nor much of the rest of the world actually, really grasps this great truth that the world is filled with much evil. The world doesn't tend to think on a lot of things in that context because it has to do with what God says is evil, and that's the problem. And even sometimes within the church, if we're not careful, we don't realize certain things have the kind of evil that they do in it. And so those are things we're ever learning and growing in and understanding and seeking to make sure that it doesn't enter into our life, that it's not a part of our life. But especially the last 100 years of technology. Talked about this before. The last 100 years of technology has brought, indeed, much comfort to mankind that the vast majority of people before this, through time, simply didn't have. They didn't have these kinds of things that we have today. And this greater ease in life because of technology, this greater comfort in life, and even a lot of the prosperity that has come with it, with, again, this great advancement in technology, has brought greater blindness, deeper selfishness, especially selfishness, to turn people inward more and more and more. Look at today. Look at what is being thrown at the youth of this world in ways that we never had, I never had, and I know I go a long way back, but 15 years ago, we didn't have. The modes of communication, the way people communicate nowadays, it has so changed, truly has. But it's turning people inward more and more and more. And you know, Satan loves that. He loves that. He doesn't want community. He doesn't want family where people communicate well with one another. He wants selfishness where people turn inward, where people can't function properly in community, in family. And that's Satan's powerful tool at this end time. Because of human nature, he's able to easily move and motivate people to so misuse then that which we've been blessed to have. Because it is a blessing when it's used properly. So again, it's brought greater blindness, deeper selfishness, and a far greater lack of true and genuine caring of people. Couldn't help but think as I was going through this what happened to the church before the apostasy, where God said the love of many would wax cold. And so it is in the world. Even the love that mankind could express otherwise to one another, what has existed in part or in large part in times past, even in communities. I think of rural communities. I think of farming communities and so forth that existed in times past where people tended to be closer together. That has so changed, so dramatically changed. So anyway, there's a greater lack of true and genuine caring of people toward their fellow man because of things like technology and toward great human suffering that surrounds them. People choose to put on blinders, as it were. They don't want to be bothered by things that are happening around them in the world that are unpleasant. So again, most people are immune to, blind to, if you will, may not be proper grammatical English, ignorant of, protected from, and are simply oblivious to much of the evil and suffering that exists in this world. We don't tend to focus upon those things. We don't tend to look at those things. And as a whole, your news in the world, in this country here especially, doesn't focus upon those things. Not really. Every once in a while, something that's sensationalized, but it doesn't look at real problems in depth in a powerful way because people don't want that. They'd rather watch people make fools of themselves. They'd rather watch the stupid things, the foolish things of the world. They'd rather know more about people or what's going on in people's lives and all the stupid things that go on out here. That's what so much of the news is anymore. It's commentary. It's not news. They make up whatever. I'm amazed sometimes they don't even tell what their credentials are. And all of a sudden you'll have someone on a hookup on the internet through, Skype or something like that, and here they're giving their opinion about what's happening. You think, who cares? That said something else, but anyway. You know, who really cares what you think? I don't care what you think. Tell me what's going on. Tell me, give me some truth here. Give me something to, but they don't do that. So again, many are simply not aware of the depth of the poverty, the hunger, the homelessness, the great injustices, the human trafficking. You think of some of the sick, perverted things that are going on in this world, and people aren't focusing on. You think the government, you think the people don't know about drugs coming into this country? I think of what happened in Afghanistan when the Taliban, which not upholding the Taliban in any fashion or form, sick beliefs, but they stopped all the opium traffic and all the growing that was taking place as a whole in Afghanistan. And we went in there and worked with warlords and made it possible for that production to start up again. And we knew full well, and we know full well what's being produced there. But that's not what the news is all about. That's not what our focus as a people is all about. And so I think of the incredible hypocrisy and how disgusting that is in a world. It really is. And it should cause people to be upset because that's ruining millions and millions of lives. You want to get upset about something and you look at the drug trafficking that's taking place in this world of governments that could stop it, and it should cause you to get upset. I'm upset by it, as you can well tell. God is upset by it, as we should know and understand, because it destroys people's lives. People have no control of their lives once they get hooked on some of these things. They don't have a choice once they become hooked. They can't control it. We have enough problems sometimes when people come along within the church and have to get off of smoking cigarettes and learn this isn't love toward your neighbor, wearing smoke in on your clothes to where you stink. You know, when you're away from something for so long, people don't realize someone who doesn't do that, you can smell it in an instant. It's there. No one's ever fooled me, but I've allowed or given time to people to change and to fight and overcome if they will. And some people haven't. And some people, it hurts them spiritually because they know they need to. A small little thing, like a weed. How much more other things than in life? If we can't address the little things, it goes back to this cultivating and keeping thing. If we can't do that in the smallest of physical things in our life, how can we do it in the deeper things that are deep, deep, deep down inside of us? Well, we can't if we can't fight those battles. So we have to start somewhere. Just as we do when we're called in the church, we begin to tithe. We begin to realize, man, this is going to change my income mightily. And how I work with my finances, everything, I'm maxed to the max, because that's the way most people live. I'm maxed to the max. You know, and now, where is this going to come from? Something's got to change. You know, so people start making changes in their life. Good changes. Because it's a matter of obedience to God. It's a matter of getting things right, making things right. It's a matter of not cheating before God. It's a matter of being honest and truthful before God. And that's what we do. And then we might even not have known about second tithe and also, ooh, there's another one. You know? And it used to be when I was there, you know, we found out about a third one. You know, how can you do this in three years up the road? And so people have to address everything, their job situation, and then the Sabbath. Because that's going to cut out, if you're working on the seventh day, that's going to affect your income. So people that God has called through time here have had to address, especially in the last many, many, many years, in the age of technology especially, have had to address the matters of the Sabbath more than ever. Finances and so forth. So again, I was talking about some of these things that people don't tend to become upset about, that we don't focus upon in society and the world, that we don't grasp because we choose not to look at the evil for being what it is and realize how severe, how bad it really is and how much this world really needs to change. And brethren, that's something we in God's church must be deeply, deeply convicted of because of what's coming, that God Almighty is righteous in what He's doing, merciful in what He's doing, even if it means the destruction of most of this earth. As He was in the days of Noah, God was exceedingly merciful at that time. Because what would have happened to mankind if he'd gone on? Who could have been saved? What minds would have been of such a willingness to even begin in any fashion and form whatsoever to ever listen to God? What minds would have gone so far that they could never be turned around, never be brought to repentance? become set in evil. So we're learning much. We're learning much. We have been in the last few years especially about this kind of thing, about how the mind works and the mercy of God. And that's one of the things that God is stressing to the world right now, going to stress the world in a very powerful way, is great mercy. His great mercy. Because if Jesus Christ had come in 2012, there well may not have been a whole lot left. Sobering. Sobering. Far more than what we can really grasp. Far more than what we can really grasp. So I think about how that people don't focus on a lot of these things, the sexual perversions, the oppressions, the drug abuse, the addiction, the drug pushing, if you will, that takes place. Became acquainted with a lot of that in ways I'd prefer never to have had knowledge of in many ways, but you know what? It's been good. One of the things that shocked me so much, rubbing some shoulders with some individuals who produced it, who made it, who manufactured it and sold it, others who used it and sold it and so forth. And one of the things that shocked me, I think I mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention it again, I still blows my mind. When I came to find out that so many of these were in small farming communities throughout Indiana and Illinois and Missouri. Small farming communities. And the knowledge given to me that there are people, it doesn't matter what walk of life, bankers, lawyers, law enforcement, schools, teachers, you look at it and it's there. And people are addicted to it. And it's gone so far, and it's gone so much farther in the last few years. And so as I was mentioning a moment ago, think about all that that's coming out of Afghanistan into Europe. And they all know it is. But who's doing anything about it? What would be better? How could you destroy all of that? You could do it pretty fast if you wanted to. Some of that's far worse than some whom they're killing. Some of what's being pushed and sent and sold by truckloads into Europe. Incredible what's going on in this world. And so on it goes. So many people in this world that are exceedingly oppressed, abused, held in bondage, suffer physically and or mentally in ways that most have no real grasp at all. No real grasp at all, because we tend to be sheltered from it, and we tend to shelter ourselves from it, from the reality, from the truth, even within the church. So again, thank God that He is bringing an end to great evil in this world. This is something that especially applies to Israel, even more so than so much of the rest of the world, because there is a book that many people say that they believe about the being who inspired it, who gave it, who preserved it to this day, that we could have, that we could look at more than the rest of the world. And who is held more accountable, those who have it or those who don't have it? So again, this is something that especially applies to Israel, as God revealed Himself to them. And what did they do? Chose evil instead. From the very beginning, they chose evil instead. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 31. I think it'd be good to see how God described this and even prophesied about it. Prophecy that was written, there's so much that begins with Adam and Eve, frankly, prophecies that are there, but it continues on, and God continues to reveal more and more the farther you go into the Bible. But even here in Genesis, very strong what God had to say and the direction He said Israel would go, what they would do. Genesis 31, verse 16. And the Eternal said unto Moses, Behold, you shall sleep with your fathers. So this is the end of his period of time of 40 years in the wilderness with the children of Israel. And this people will rise up and go a-whoring after other gods, or after the gods of the strangers of the land. Did I have the right scripture? I see you all looking around there. What did I put Genesis for? I know it's Exodus. Is it Exodus 31? Maybe it's even Deuteronomy. You know, I really don't. I don't know why I put Exodus down here. Well, let's do a little quick looking here and make sure that we get it right for everybody that's out there listening. And I appreciate you all shaking your head and think, whoa, where am I? But nobody said anything. Has anybody found it yet? Deuteronomy. I knew it. I that was in the back of my mind. I don't know why I even said Exodus. Yeah, because that's the end of his 40 years. Wake up, boy. Let's try this again. Let's try Deuteronomy 31. And please, don't let me learn from your expressions. Just like you're lost. Just put up your hand and say, I don't think it's there. I think it's somewhere else. Anyway, Deuteronomy 31. We'll try this again. So he's telling Moses, you shall sleep with your fathers, and this people will rise. Why? Yeah, I'm sorry, but I just have to interject here. Genesis? You've got to be kidding. Anyway. This shows how fallible we are at moments in time. And this people will rise up and go whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land. And I was thinking as I was going through some of this, reading this, and I thought, what's being addressed in the book and how some of these things began to be picked up going back through the Roman Empire and some of the beliefs that came out of the land, and especially when you look at what happened through a process of time there with one who began to take on the name of Peter. Because this was a mixture of all the gods of the land. That's what it was. And brought into Christianity. And so much of what we have today and what's called traditional Christianity, this is where it came from. Incredible. And so he says, this is what you're going to do. You're going to whoring after the gods and strangers of the land, where they go, where they be among you, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I made with them. And so more and more people turn farther and farther away from any strong values of life, any good values of life, and see that happening continually. Then my anger shall be kindled against them in that day, even in a physical, carnal way. Then my anger shall be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them. You know, it's happened over and over again where God has dealt with Israel in this manner through time, and it's most assuredly happening toward this end time in a very powerful way. I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured. And many evils and troubles shall befall them. There's never been a time like that that's in past history that's going to be in front of us. And many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us? That's how low people have to be brought. That's how much has to be ripped away from people, because nothing that they do, nothing that they are going to be seeking after is going to be giving them hope. Instead, what they have hoped in is going to be destroyed in front of them. And I will surely hide my face in that day for all the evils which they have worked. So God is letting them know because of all the evils of Israel, all the evils that mankind has done, that he's going to bring evil upon them. That's the judgment. Because people will not listen, have not listened for 6,000 years. For all the evils that they have worked and that they have turned unto other gods. Now therefore write you this song for you and teach it the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, and this song may be witness for me against the children of Israel. For when I shall have brought them into the land which I swore unto their fathers, that flows with milk and honey, and they shall have eaten and filled themselves and waxed fat, then will they turn unto other gods and serve them and provoke me and break my covenant. And we see the history of what took place. But the greater fulfillment of some of this was when God fulfilled what he promised in the very beginning concerning the things that would happen toward the end of an age and how he blessed Israel, and some of the prophecies were fulfilled concerning Ephraim and Manasseh, that Manasseh would become the greatest, most powerful nation the earth has ever known. And it shall come to pass when many evils and troubles have befallen them, that this song shall testify against them as a witness. For it shall not be forgotten out of the mouths of their seed, for I know their imagination, which they go about, even now, before I had brought them into the land which I swore. And so again, God has always provided, if you will, whether it be in this particular case here, a witness that would be toward them because of what they were to learn then, and also a witness that God said would testify as to what they have done and what's going to happen to them and why it's going to take place. And now in clearer terms than ever before. Verse 22, Moses therefore wrote this song the same day and taught it the children of Israel. And he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge and said, Be strong and of good courage, for you shall bring the children of Israel into the land which I swore unto them, and I will be with you. And it came to pass, when Moses had made an end of writing the words of the law of the book, until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites, which bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal, saying, Take this book of the law, and put it in the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal your God, that it may be there for a witness against you. Verse 27, For I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. He knows human nature. He knew what would happen to human beings, though they're given incredible truth, revelations of things that had never been revealed to mankind to that degree by any measure before that, and he gave it to an entire nation. For I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet alive with you this day, you have been rebellious against the Eternal. So Moses saw it for 40 years. And how much more after my death? Moses knew what would take place. Gather me all the elders of your tribes and your officers that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to record against them. For I know that after my death, you will utterly corrupt yourselves. Isn't that incredible? He knew what would take place. And turn aside from the way which I commanded you. How did he know this? God inspired him to grasp, to know, to understand their spirit and what would happen when they were blessed exceedingly so in a land flowing with milk and honey. If they rebelled in the wilderness and God did so many miracles among them, what would happen? Carnal human nature becomes so exceedingly blessed as he said they would become. Turn inward. Selfish. Lustful, on and on it goes. For I know that after my death you will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days. So it's prophetic, very much prophetic. It's not just about when they would go into the promised land. It's literally talking about another time. That Hebrew word, latter, easily meaning then end or last day. Because you will do evil in the sight of the Eternal. And I think of this world today, you don't have to look very far. If you look according to what God says life should be like and how people should live, and you look at what we have, there's so much evil. It truly is. And as a whole, we don't look at it. We don't want to see it. We put on blinders. Because I think of what God said about righteous Lot. Because he vexed his righteous soul day by day because of what he saw. And so we can't afford to fully ignore it. We need to grasp and comprehend what is going on around us on a continual basis. And sometimes in life, that's the very reason why God lets us see, makes us see oftentimes, what's really around us, so that we can truly grasp the need for great change and that this world cannot continue on the way it is. We are at the end. It can't go on like this. And evil will befall you in the latter days because you will do evil in the sight of the Eternal. There is so much evil being done. Every nation around the world, and especially in Ephraim and Manasseh, especially in the scattered nation of Israel, but especially in this one. Because we should be, have been in times past, more of an example, a leader, in better ways as far as something very physical is concerned. Not anymore. Not anymore. Because you do evil in the sight of the Eternal, to provoke him to anger through the works of your hands. And Moses spoke in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. So, very powerful right there toward the end of Moses' life of what God gave to him that would go all the way to the end, all the way before God would intervene to change it, to bring an end to evil. Thank God. Something along these lines was given by Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 7. Pretty sure I have this one right. Jeremiah 7 and verse 21. Thus says the Eternal of Hosts, the God of Israel, put or add your burnt offerings unto your sacrifices and eat flesh. So in other words, it's not going to do any good. For I spoke not unto your fathers, nor commanded them in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings and sacrifices, but this is what I commanded them, saying, obey my voice. Very basic, very simple. Who does it? Who does it? Those who call themselves Christian today, of traditional Christianity, and look at the marriages, look at their lives of so many, look at the things that take place. I think of that which is in the South. I think of that which sometimes reflects a great deal of that. And I think of country music. You would think that that would give some basis of something that has moral fiber to it or strength to it, as far as, like I mentioned earlier, about small farming communities, that should be the bastion of conservatism, if you will, of how you live your life, of family, and so forth. It isn't. That started changing several decades ago. Started changing because of technology. Because of technology. Not because of technology, I guess a better way of saying it is because of the misuse of technology. That's the proper way of stating it. And so people don't desire to obey God. But it's very simple. So again, things like Western music. Think how corrupt, how evil. Those, you know, people look to these things, those who sing it, those who are out there pushing it, and they themselves have horrible lives. Adultery, so common. Adultery, so common. Accepted. Like, what a sick, sick, sick world. And what that does to families. What that does in people's lives. Who cries out? They don't cry out until they're deep into the repercussions of it. But they don't cry out to God. They just cry out because they don't get what they want, what they expected they should have, or whatever it might be in life. And even when people get what they want, they're not satisfied, and after a little while, could you imagine somebody commit adultery, they might do it again? I'm amazed sometimes by people in the society and the world around us. You think, if someone's going to cheat with someone who themselves you know is a cheater, and you think you're going to have a better life with you and they'll never cheat on you, where's your brain? Where's your thinking? Don't you know this tells about the character of the individual right then and there? You should just expect it because it's going to happen as a whole. You're not something special. What you did was evil, and you're going to suffer for it. I'm just touching on something very small. Something very small that takes place in the world around us. But this is what I commanded them, saying, obey my voice. And so those who call themselves Christian and don't uphold some of the most basic laws of God. Yeah, obviously we understand they reject God's Sabbath, but they reject the rest of the commandments too when it's not convenient for them. See? Amazing, isn't it? Think people should be upset by disobedience, by evil in this world? But this I commanded them, saying, obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people. That's what it takes. Just obey my voice. Look to me. Desire me in your life. And God will intervene. God will help. God looks for that. but it's not there yet. Sad what man has to go through. Only a few have ever been called out of that. And how blessed are you? I couldn't help but think as I was going through some of this, we have a hard time grasping what we have. It is very hard for us not to begin taking it for granted, not to let familiarity begin to breed contempt even for what God gives to us. Truly, that's just the way we are as human beings. And we can't afford that, especially not right now, because of what we're entering into. But this is what I commanded them, obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk you in all the ways that I have commanded you, that it may be well with you. But they did not listen. That's what this book is all about. I'm dumbfounded. I am dumbfounded by what God is giving and the message he's giving in this particular period of time that was different from the period before this, because there's a much different objective right now. Because before, the history was and the judgment was, you have never listened, therefore this is the judgment. Now, God is giving people an opportunity. If you will listen, you can change things. If you will listen, I will listen. It's a very powerful message. And God is working it out in such a way that people are going to have that opportunity. But they did not listen nor incline their ear, but walked in the counsels and the imagination of their evil heart. As human beings, we don't tend to think the heart of human beings is evil. It's not set on good, not God's good. Sometimes we can almost be a little too trusting. You have to be careful in this whole world. Sad, but you do. And went backward and not forward. Verse 25, since the day that your fathers came forth out of the land of Egypt unto this day, I have even sent unto you all my servants the prophets, daily rising up early and sending. Yet they did not listen unto me, nor incline their ear. 6,000 years? 6,000 years. But hardened their neck, and they did worse than their fathers. Therefore you shall speak all these words unto them, but they will not listen. 6,000 years? People not listening. What an incredible thing that people are going to be given an opportunity more than ever before. Actually, more than any other time in such a massive way as far as the world is concerned, to have an opportunity to listen. You shall also call unto them, but they will not answer you. What a condemnation toward Israel. And that's exactly the way it's been through time until this very end time. Because now there's a transition in time that's getting ready to take place in a very powerful way from the world governing itself to God governing it. And he is going to change things dramatically, drastically. But you shall say unto them, this is a nation that does not obey the voice of the Eternal, their God. How many ways can it be said? Nor receive correction. Truth is perished and is cut off from their mouth. Not only is it perished, it's the last thing people really want. They don't want the truth. But God's going to work to help soften their hearts. So again, many just do not consider the world to be evil, or human nature to be evil. Instead, people have a kind of tunnel vision, as I've mentioned, that chooses to look at things in a very narrow and selfish way. What an incredible thing. Choosing to look at things in a narrow, as a whole, and selfish way, with a selfish view, especially when it comes to addressing things that are unpleasant to look at. I thought of something as I was listening to some of the, I don't know what to call it, kind of like a circus, debates going on. What the world must think. People acting like little children. I don't care if it is about individuals that have attained great ability and so forth. or power, as you might call it, in this world because of whatever they've been elected to and may have become through time here and what they've done. But to watch some of this take place and people act like little children, I mean, how sick can this be? That people have to lower themselves to behave like that. And yet we see it. Incredible. And yet I do think of some things that one individual talks about from time to time that the establishment as a whole, quote unquote, hate him. But he's bringing to light some things by how strong he has to say certain things that truly do need to be looked at and should be addressed, especially when it comes to certain things about things like, little things like political correctness. What a bunch of garbage. What a bunch of swill. What a bunch of stupidity and hypocrisy that people have to worry about what they say and how they say it. Now, it's one thing to be offensive, but it's another thing to be able to talk openly and true about certain things as well. So there's a right balance there, but this nation has lost all balance in those things as a whole. It's really not there. It doesn't exist as a whole. But I think of one thing that was brought up when they were talking about waterboarding and people talking about how bad it was. Now, I hope you understand what I'm saying as I go through some of this. But the one individual that you know full well who I'm talking about made the comments here that he would go beyond that. And I don't know that some understand what's being said there, but the point being is that, as one individual brought it out, war is war. If you fight in a war, if that's what you choose, if that's what you've chosen to do, then as a physical carnal world without God, and even with God, think what God had the Israelites do and what he told them. Destroy man, woman, and child in the land where you go. Because there's something very simple in that understanding, that if someone else God gives to occupy it as a people who are to live a certain way of life, then indeed everything else was to be destroyed so that it could become successful, so that it have a potential for success. Because what would happen is exactly what God said would happen. In real life, you begin to mingle other beliefs and religious ideas into it, and after a while, the foundation of what you are is going to be destroyed. And that's exactly what happened, because they didn't obey God. To this day, there are problems with some peoples because they didn't destroy them. There's still a thorn in their side. And some people say, well, that's awfully hard and crude and real. Well, war is war. And that's why we're going to have what comes upon this world. So when God begins to do things in this world and man, woman, and child are destroyed, how do you think? You think, oh, that's just not fair? You know, that little children have to suffer? Man's done it to himself, and man hasn't listened. And just like in the flood, little children died. But there came a point in time, and God has a plan, that they're going to be able to be resurrected in an age, in a time, when they won't be raised, reared under anything but the truth. When society in the world is motivated with right motivation, when it's governed by God's family, and at that point in time, there will be multiple millions, not 144,000, multiple millions serving God and spirit life to serve those people, to help them in their transition in life, to guard, to guide, to direct, protect, to judge, swift judgment if need be. And there will be some who are resurrected who aren't going to make it through the 100 years. When they've come to a point that they have committed the unpardonable sin by their actions, by their refusal to listen to God. So anyway, sometimes our judgment and how we think, it isn't based in real soundness sometimes. And we have to really examine ourselves closely on what's happening in this world and why it's happening in this world, and always keep God and God's plan and purpose in front of us all the while. Just why I mentioned in one of the sermons not long after coming back here about that 100-year period, that we need to esteem it very highly for what it means. Because oftentimes we look at death and think that everything's over, and the reality is, for some, it's just going to be beginning. When they're awakened, no matter whether they're young or old or whatever they are, the world they're brought up in is one you and I, though we know about it and have great knowledge of, we don't understand it yet. We don't grasp how beautiful, how magnificent, how incredible it's going to be during that period of time for people to be able to be transformed, be able to yield to God, to not be in bondage to anything, nothing, fully healed of anything and everything around them. So today we find people want to be free to carry their own definitions of what is good and what's evil. Isn't that amazing? I think the scriptures talk about those that call evil good. That's what our society has become. That's what the people embrace. They think that things are out here that, well, that's not so bad. That's pretty good. That's really what I want. That's what I want to be a part of my life. That's what I want to watch. That's what I want to take in. That's what I want to listen to. That's what I want in my brain. I want that. Don't take it away from me. Don't take it away from me. Incredible. That which is moral is, or immoral, anyway. They want to judge what's moral and immoral, or right or wrong. Sad. So who wants to listen to God? That's the way it's always been, isn't it? Who will listen to God? And again, that's the major thrust, the message of the entire book. In reality, people have a kind of response that I had to a movie that I saw the other day. I want to share a little bit with you, because before it was over, I was enraged in mind. And it just brought up so many things about how evil, how cruel this world is, and how cruel mankind has been to mankind. But this really brought it to a head in one respect. And so many things do if we can look at it in life and realize how sick can mankind be, and things that are still going on to this day that are so sick in life. But sometimes it's right to be enraged. Sometimes it's right to be moved and motivated to so hate evil, shouldn't we be? Instead of ignoring it or trying to act like it doesn't exist, on the contrary, we of all people need to understand its existence, the existence of evil, because of what's getting ready to take place. Because we want to see a change from top to bottom. So much in this world is simply evil, and people are not appalled, shocked, outraged, and horrified by the evil that surrounds us. And we should be. And I hope we all are. Every time you see evil, to be outraged by it. Lot vexed his righteous soul day by day in the things he saw around him, what people were doing to themselves, their lives, and family, and so forth. How much worse is it today? So much worse. So again, people should have a response to evil, as I did to this particular movie that I saw on TV this last week, entitled 12 Years a Slave. I don't know how many saw it. It was directed by a man called Solomon. I'm sorry. It was written by a man named Solomon Northrup in 1853, basically about his life as one who was a New York State, born free, African-American, who was kidnapped in the Washington, D.C. area and smuggled into or sold into slavery in Louisiana, and worked on plantations for 12 years in that area before he was finally released. Anyway, I mention this movie because it touches on great evil. You know, one thing when I've gone through visiting some areas of Europe, I think of some of those areas in Great Britain that I visited, in castles, where I visited some of those areas. Is it Buchen? What is the name of that one town? concentration camp that the Germans had of some. I'm not sure that's the right name. There was another one we saw one time, even in the area of Belgium. But anyway, places that I've seen like that, I don't even like to visit. Old castles, and sometimes what the area they have is like the dungeon area or the place of torture and so forth. And I detest going through any of those things anymore. I didn't like them when I went through them. But there is a reality there that you see how mankind has treated mankind, and how could people do that to each other? It just, some of the things that people have done to one another, and I think especially the Catholic Church doing that to a lot of people. How could anyone uphold an organization that has a history of doing some of the most atrocious things through time that people have done to others in the name of their religious beliefs? Because they have tortured a lot of people through time. A lot of people. Incredible. Or who could do the kinds of things that so many did in the Boston area in the movie that was written about that? How could anyone support such a sick organization? Blows my mind. Anybody hearing that, putting that out there, that's going to be a good one for society. So let it be. Because it's steeped in great evil. Comes out of great evil. Of things that people have done to each other. Of things that those who are supposed to protect them instead abuse them. Thankfully, I've known of some people, talked to some people in times past, who have quit the organization because they can't be associated with that. Duh, what took so long? How can you allow such a thing to exist instead of just moving around area to area or whatever, things that took place? Anyway, getting back to this particular story and some of the things that took place. "12 Years a Slave." Now, I'm not saying that everybody should go out there and watch it as a family show. That's up to you. Personally, I'd have no problem whatsoever showing my children and teaching them everything that's there from beginning to end. Some say, "Oh, but there is some nudity there." Well, shockaroo, amazing. In the context of everything that was given there, it's reality of life. Reality of life and how evil people can be toward other people. Enraged me that people could treat each other like that. And what's sick is I know that stuff still exists to this day as far as prejudices is concerned. The division that takes place. The place I was, very much a problem. Because people didn't trust each other and people hated each other. Because many had been abused by differences in race or beliefs. And it was bad how people treat each other. And think toward each other and speak of each other that they don't even know. We live in such a sick, 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 filthy world because it doesn't live by the laws of God. It doesn't live by the ways of God. And because of how people can treat each other and judge each other. And I think especially even here how this one man on the plantation would use the Bible to preach to them about the slaves, of why certain things would take place and how they'd be beaten many stripes if they didn't listen to their Lord, to their master. That certainly sounds religious, doesn't it? About as good as anything else in traditional Christianity being taught today. Because a lot of the things did come from perversion and religion even there. But anyway, I'll just be candid with you. By the end of the show, I cried. I had tears flowing down my eyes. When you see what took place, and life that was lost, suffering that took place, and the deep, incredibly emotions and feelings it created in people's lives. And the reason I mention this is because it's just one of so many things that continue to go on in society and the world and family lives, and families are being broke up today by things just like drugs. I think of that one as well. I think of how sick it is when, indeed, that so much of it could be stopped, and it isn't stopped. I think of our government alone who's been responsible for bringing drugs into areas of the United States in order to support some other military operation in some other part of the world or whatever it might be. How sick can human life be? And then get a tap slap on the back of the wrist just for one or two because they had to say something to somebody so the world wouldn't condemn fully a whole country. I mean, because that wouldn't be fair. Sick. Great evil, brother. Do you see it? You vex your righteous soul day by day because of what you see around you? I think of how Trump mentioned that he had different ones. I've heard him say this more than once now, but I heard it the other night. How he mentioned, I guess it's because he was visiting up through, was it Massachusetts or Maine, somewhere he was visiting on his way over to, anyway, he talked about New Hampshire and some of those he'd visited with there. And I'd heard him make this comment before that one of the biggest problems that in the state that they felt existed was an epidemic of drug use, primarily heroin. Isn't that amazing? That finally a small area is taking note. That is their number one problem that they believe exists in their communities, destroying lives, because it's destroying lives. It destroys families. What chance do people have when these things begin to take place and happen to the degree and level that they do? They're in a bondage that you can't even begin to grasp unless you've been touched by it. They're in bondage. They have no power. And how it spreads and how it's pushed. Sick, sick world. I think of synthetic marijuana, things they call K2 and spice, that I also saw because basically anything was brought in that people wanted if they had enough money and chose to go around and skirt the law. And they knew it was there. But anyway, another thing that was rampant was K2. Certain individuals. I think of one individual. I saw it was several. But I wanted just one who I knew fairly well. Played some cards with at one point in time. And when he started smoking this stuff, within a month's time, he was like a zombie when he wasn't even smoking it. It did something to his brain. Everybody was making fun of him that knew him. Just making fun of him. Because he'd walk up and down sometimes and talking to himself. Not even when he was on it. They're finding this stuff now. This stuff called spice. It's an epidemic in a lot of areas and it's so cheap. Synthetic marijuana. That it's causing epilepsy. And we had several who had that. I wonder, could that be possible? Anyway. Think of some of the stupidity of people, of what they're willing to do to their lives and to their minds, but they do it because they can't cope with what they're living with, whatever that might be. Just happened to look up, I was looking this up on the internet, I want to make sure that I couldn't remember the word spice, but it was spice, they call it K2 over there, but it's also called spice in some areas. But the thing popped up on the internet, talked about the five most common drugs among teens and order, obviously the most common, marijuana. And I think about how people talk about marijuana, that it doesn't hurt you. And, you know, I feel for people in this world. I understand they're... maybe I shouldn't say that. Sadly, there are some. I believe this. I believe there are better ways of being treated. But I feel for people in the physical carnal world out here. But I know there are some because they use it and people make fun of this medical thing. But I know that there are some that's about the only way they can cope without having to take certain drugs that totally, they lose everything in their mind if they use it responsibly and so forth. But as a whole, most society obviously doesn't use it responsibly. And it's a matter of a culture. And that culture does easily lend into then the next step. And that's the problem, far above and beyond that. So no, people shouldn't smoke as a whole. You know, so yes, anyway, probably open up a can of worms there, but it's the point being that there's a lot of hypocrisy in this world, a lot of misuse of things in this world, and I can't wait till it's all brought to an end and these things not even exist anymore. Another one is misuse of prescription drugs. A lot of adults do that. Misuse prescription drugs, get hooked on certain things, and after a while, affects their mind and their life, and they don't even know what's happening. And sometimes we have to be careful that we don't start taking too many even ourselves, because some things will mess you up. Anyway, there's a You have to try it for a balance in an evil world. It's an evil world, so what do you do? Anyway, you have to make those choices yourself, but be careful. Ecstasy is the next. It's a culture. And they brought this up, how that a lot of the kind of parties and so forth and environment are things that people become involved in, especially in, teens. You're talking about different kinds of partying that they do and so forth, and this is a very common one. And that leads to other things. Because these things lead to people letting down. And morality goes out the window. See, that's the problem. People let themselves be free. And you know what happens when you do that? Others are willing to take advantage of it. That's what happens. And various inhalants. People mess up their brains with the stuff. They mess up their brains. Because they can't think right oftentimes when these things do certain things in the mind. And then teenagers, the last one, cocaine and heroin. What a horrible thing that teens have to deal with, are dealing with, and taking cocaine and heroin. And yet it exists out there. Let me ask these teachers here. Does anyone know of any that are having problems with some of this in their schools? There's one in particular I was looking for. Okay. Well, one of you especially does, even more so. Sick, sick world. And what does it do to families? What is it doing? And what about their future? What about jobs? How do people function? Well, sad, sad. Vexed his righteous soul day by day. Shouldn't be hard for us to do that. Every day of our life, to pray, Father, your kingdom come, please, quickly, speedily. But we know it is. But that's the gist of the overall framework of what I'm speaking of here, of a desire we have for his government being established, of wanting to see an end to the evil, because it hurts you, because you take it personally, because you hate what's taking place, because you loathe it, because you welcome the time of humbling that's coming. I welcome it with all my being, because I know more than I've ever known how much is needed, because there is absolutely no other way that people will begin to change or become humbled. What a hideous thing about human nature, that things have to get so bad so that people will give in to pride. And even then, so many just will not. They're going to fight to the end. They'd rather die than humble themselves. And so many will. Galatians chapter 1. Galatians chapter 1. Paul, an apostle, not of men, neither by man. You know, something we must always understand in God's church, mightily so, that there is a way that God works, and it's not of man, and it's not by man. To never omit, to never neglect, to never disregard God in the picture. But by Jesus Christ and God the Father, who raised him from the dead, and all the brethren which are with me unto the churches of Galatia, grace be unto you and peace from God the Father and from our Lord Jesus Christ. You know, God's desire toward us, mercy and grace and favor, who gave himself for our sins that he might deliver us from this present evil world. It was back then, how much worse now? It's always been evil. The world has always been evil because man's nature is evil. It's evil. It's not good. It's not based on good. And deliver us from this present evil world according to the will of God the Father, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen. So be it. So God and Christ are working to prepare us, or to prepare for them, the ushering in, I should say, of the millennial reign, obviously of the kingdom of God on earth, and bringing great evil to an end, finally, to an end. And this preparation is much different than what was being done prior to 2008. Things that are taking place right now are much, 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 much different than what they were prior to 2008. Now we are already into a period that's getting close to being 3.5 years now. What is it? You know, 3.5, right at 3.5 years now before Pentecost 2012. A little past that. But the problem with mankind, and especially for the scattered nations of Israel, is that, again, they will not listen to God. And God is now working to make that potential, or the potential for that, and the willingness to listen, that willingness to be, if you will, to listen, to be enhanced, to be encouraged mightily. It's incredible what's taking place. Looking at my time here, I think we have time to continue. We're going to continue, but I just don't know how far I'm going to try to shoot for here. And so to bring evil to an end, as it must be done before Christ stands again upon the Mount of Olives. I'm saying that way for a specific reason, as we're going to find out in a little bit. Before he actually stands upon the Mount of Olives, great evil must be brought upon mankind in order to begin humbling mankind so that people will begin, or become motivated, I should say, to begin listening to God. And again, that's what the third book is really all about. So it's becoming more and more clear that for us, we have a full year, or at least should say that we've already gotten well into it. But talking about, when I first got back, talking about we're going to be able to observe the Feast of Tabernacles this year. We planned for it. We've done those things and so forth. Because it should be abundantly clear that there is a work that God is doing right now. And that work is about the book. It's about getting it ready. And that's all in God's hands. The writing of it, God knew exactly when I should go through what I went through. Exactly. There's timing involved here. Precise. Perfect. Exact. And to the rate, certain things were written. And in which some things were rewritten. Talking about chapter 6. Anyway, everything in these things concerning God's church is in his control, because everything that he's working for right now is awesome. It's awesome. And what we're going through and what he's doing in the world. I wish we could see more. I think by the time you get through the book and we begin to talk about other things in sermons, God's going to bless us to be able to see more. Because it's awesome. To grasp and comprehend how God is working with nations and has been for several years now is awesome. Because it's all for a great purpose. To grant mercy. To grant an ability for many more to be saved. Whereas before it was just a simple judgment. You haven't listened, you're going to die. You've been judged. That's what you are going to receive, because you have been judged for what you've done and how you didn't listen for over 50 years to God's apostle, who went out in radio and TV and magazines more powerfully than any other religion has during that period, or did during that period of time. Awesome. Who listened? Incredible. So again, God's making it very clear that, and more clear as we go along here, obviously, that we have a full year before us to get the book finished, that it be made available to those of the different languages it's being translated into, that people are working on currently. And we may well be in a cycle of what Daniel referred to as a period of a time, times and a half a time, that will be fulfilled before God manifests the end to evil that must be brought to this world in the last 50 days, because that's when he's going to do it. He is going to bring a great end to evil during that last 50 days, because it's during that period he himself intervenes powerfully, so as he says, to destroy those who are destroying the earth. Evil. Incredible. So again, it's very clear that, and I just can't help but think about some of the things that God gave to us when we didn't know it, but after, into 2009, 2010, and 2011, into that period of time, there's much given to us that really is about now. It wasn't for back then, but God let us live through that because our focus was, our target was 2012, but God gave us a dry run, if you will, to prepare us. And he gave us much understanding of some things that are really about now. They were prophetic. So it's very clear again that God has given us a year to complete and make available the words of this book to the world. But we're not going to jump rapidly into any great change immediately when that happens. I think some have felt, as happened in times past, that all of a sudden when you're down to the last 3.5 years, all of a sudden everything's going to rip loose on the earth. We're going to see things happening all around us. It's not going to happen that way, and thank God it isn't. Do we remember what we went through? Well, we've been prepared for this. We should see. We should know. We should know just by the progress of the book alone where things are. Not going to happen until that book is out there, until finally we're able to be able to talk once again as before, to be whatever God opens up. And it's time, which is God's time. So again, that should be very clear to us. So there's more. I think of something else that God also showed. You know that time in Daniel talks about a time, time and a half a time? Which, again, God has also revealed, which I've also talked about. There are periods of times of specific judgment. We're not talking about that because judgment is broken down differently. That's broken down into 280 days and then the, what is it, 900 and... whatever it is, remains. That's the time, time, and half a time when it has to do with judgment. This has to do with a specific time frame of physical things that are going to happen on this earth. And I think of that there was something that was given to us at a particular time where God was showing that doesn't have to be in a matter of an order of what's going to happen first is time, and then times, 2 years, and then a half a time, half a year. It can be times, and time, and a half a time. I hope it is. I hope that it's divided up that way. You might wonder, what am I talking about? I'm talking about when things actually begin in earnest, with greater power. That's why I've been telling some, talking to Johnny and to Wayne, and maybe mentioned to a few of you, that I feel very, very strongly that we're going to have another Feast of Tabernacles. That means of necessity. That we're going to have the ability then to travel to feast sites. Now, I hope that's the way it transpires, and I hope that's what's being fulfilled and accomplished. Because when evil begins, and I'm talking about some really great evil, when it's unleashed on this earth, it's going to be far worse than what we can comprehend in our minds. You can't comprehend it, and I don't think we really have to. We'll just address it when it arrives and deal with it when it arrives. And as we're looking to God, as we look to God, God will take care of us. I think of different ways that God is going to take care of people. There are going to be people who want to know you. There are going to be people who want to search you out. Well, there are going to be two kinds of people who want to search you out. You want to pray that the good ones get a hold of you. Who want to know the truth because you're looking to God for protection and favor. And there'll be those who will cling to you to want to know what you know. Awesome. Awesome. At some point in time before this is all over with, you're going to be dumbfounded by what you experience and by what you see God accomplish around you and in your life. Awesome things that are going to take place. And so I look at that and I think of where we are and realize that, just talking about if it were a time, talking about almost the elections of next year, but hopefully if we're talking about that period of time, if we have another feast besides this one here, after we get to a period of time of elections, first week of November, who knows? Who knows what we're going to see in this country? Because at some point, This country is at the top of the list for when things begin. I think of how God is working with, if we can understand how God works with us individually in our lives to call us, to draw us, to work with us, it's hard for us to grasp a God that's working with millions and billions right now, with leaders, with people, with those who are going to have a great deal of influence as to the movement of certain things that take place between nations as things progress, as things happen. And he's working with them. And I think especially in this nation here, how certain things are being worked with. And here, sadly, it's more a condition of people are being allowed to dig a deeper pit, because the fall is going to be a lot greater. When you're this great, the fall is going to be great. And God's going to allow it to be very great, because if it isn't, people here aren't going to repent and change. I hate to say it, but I tell you, this nation above all nations is going to receive some of the hardest hit when it happens. They're going to be hit first. And there are reasons for this. And we will learn that as time goes along. We'll come to understand it in deeper ways. And we're going to see a lot of things. And they're not going to be pretty. But some of it's going to be beautiful. There is nothing more beautiful than to see a person change. There's nothing more beautiful than to see a mind that all of a sudden says, I see it. That experience of coming in contact with someone who all of a sudden their eyes are opened up and they see it, they see the truth, and the excitement and the joy that's there, and to realize what God is doing in their life because of the particular time that they are living in and what the purpose is for them being awakened. Wow, we have seen nothing. We've been given a taste of it in times past, but just a slight taste. So again, I don't know about you, but I am immensely excited about where we are and where we're going. We live in awesome times. God has called us to an awesome purpose. We have opportunities and blessings in front of us that we don't grasp the magnitude of. And so often we don't even grasp the magnitude of our calling, period, in the sense of the deep thankfulness and appreciation of the incredible mercy and patience that God has with us. Truly. Let alone the magnitude of the purpose of it in this end time. I mentioned before the different things that people have experienced in this book through time. It's about right now. They experienced things, they were taught things, they were given things in their age, and as a whole, it was for a very few with whom God was working, especially in the first 4,000 years. But those examples of things that are written there were written for us now, so we could have it now. I was thinking about today, listening to someone whose split is going to be out here short time now. But he was talking about, as I was thinking about getting closer to unleavened bread anyway, coming out of Egypt and the things that the Israelites saw and what God did and what God performed. And I couldn't help but think, all the things that they saw, all the things that they witnessed, all the things they saw take place in Egypt when Egypt was destroyed, and God protected an entire nation of people from that because it wasn't upon them. And I think of what we're going to see and what we're going to witness that is going to make that look pretty small. And yet we're moved, and we should be, when we read about the Exodus and what took place and when the sea parted. You haven't seen anything yet. You haven't seen anything yet of what God is going to be doing. So again, I'm excited about where we are and the time we have in front of us and what we're going to be able to accomplish, and then to wait and see when this nation is struck. And even then, how it transpires and how long it covers, how long a period of time it covers, because there's so much that shows that the last 6 months on this earth, before Christ returns, that's going to be the major period of time of things happening. Anyway, I know that you do. Hopefully we do more and more as we see the age in which we live in. because it helps us to change ourselves. When you see evil, when you cry out to God to help you to see evil more clearly in life and in your own life, that it helps us to loathe it, to hate it, and to want to get rid of it, to fight against it, to change, to grow, to yield ourselves more and more to God, because we've been given such great opportunities. Truly have. We've been given so much before God. And yet, we must do a lot of what Lot did, of loathing, being hurt by, hating what we see taking place in this world that's destroying it all around us. It doesn't matter where you look. It doesn't matter where you look. Everything has to be changed. Everything is destructive and destroying itself and getting worse and worse so fast. Anyway, I thought it would be good here to pick up some things. I think about that period of time again. The more we grasp what God is doing in that last 50 days, the more we can begin to see and understand why he does and how he does, the things that are going to take place once the actual effects of the first, second, third, and fourth trumpet take place. So today I thought I'd continue on a little bit from some things in the sixth chapter. We're getting really close to that now. I think someone was telling me on the way in here that next week, I think, is the last installment of chapter 5. And I hope that chapter 6 is going to be closer, but I don't know where it's in the editing stage. How are we doing in that area? Pretty good? Okay. So I haven't talked to Audra about it for a little while, so I'm not really sure where everything is in chapter 6. But anyway, we're going to keep pushing it forward the best we can and try to keep up this weekly rate that we're going at right now. But I want to pick up in part of what was said last week. When I first read some of this, I'd really like to go back and read all that I read, but I'm not going to. I'm going to pick up a little bit of where we left off, and then I'm going to continue on, because some have been picking up on some things that you need to grasp and understand that are awesomely exciting to me. But again, it's all part of a process here of why the message is here in the first place. But I'm going to start here. Let's see. I'm just going to pick it up. And this is a little ways into it. I was just thinking what heading this is under. It's under a heading called God's Intervention, early in the book. But just picking it up here, it says, if God had allowed World War III to have begun soon after 2008, his plan to end that war would have been accomplished in one day, which would have been on Pentecost in 2012. That would have been such a powerful event that mankind would have been stopped in its tracks, shocked to the core of its being, and truly ready to listen to God. However, if the world had been humbled in that one day, the death and destruction would have been exceedingly great. Because God has revealed that there are a lot more going to be destroyed at that point in time in that than what would have taken place in the sixth trumpet as far as the nuclear war that was taking place. God prophetically reveals, continuing on, that the sixth trumpet of Revelation is the time where mankind will engage in a final, all-out nuclear confrontation. It has already been stated that this confrontation will destroy one-third of all the earth, which means one-third of mankind will die as a result, or 2.3 billion people. Yet, the next trumpet, which is the seventh trumpet, consists of the seven last plagues. And this is when God intervenes and stops that war. It states that the purpose of these final great plagues is for him to destroy those who are destroying the earth. This destruction will come upon those people and nations who are engaged in supporting that war, a war that is destroying the earth. If this event in the administration of these plagues had occurred in 2012, there would have been at least an additional 3.5 billion people destroyed in that single day, and likely hundreds of millions more. These events that happen toward the very end of this end time should be feared, just as the flood in Noah's day should have been feared. God will be executing great judgment on this earth against those who have so corrupted their minds that they become blindly engaged in helping to destroy the earth. But what if these plagues could be administered by God in a different manner, whereby many could have the potential to be saved? That's what I love about this. God is revealing to us that by doing things in a different way, fulfilling the basis of all the prophecies, but in a different manner than what they had been shown before, that awesome things can be accomplished, or the potential for them at least is there. No one will be able to say, God, you weren't merciful to us. What if the number, continuing on, what if the number of the dead could potentially be cut in half, or even far more than if these things had occurred in 2012? When asking these questions, it's important to understand that the only way that number can ultimately be reduced in such a large manner is if those who are destroying the earth will begin to listen to God and cease from their evil. That is what God is now preparing to offer to those who would otherwise come under these plagues and be destroyed. As always, the choice is theirs and theirs alone to make. And then under the section, Purpose of the Seven Last Plagues. As stated, those plagues are going to be poured out first and foremost for the purpose of stopping World War III and to destroy those who are destroying the earth. And those prophetic events are set and cannot be changed. God is now revealing the answer to the following question. How can these plagues be poured out in a different manner that might potentially produce a stronger desire within many people and even perhaps in some entire nations that they become humbled, begin listening to God, and then cease from the evil they are causing on the earth? By understanding how God has now changed the manner in which he administers these plagues, once he begins to directly intervene, then one will be able to begin to understand other things that God is doing and changing in order to offer many more people the potential to live into a new age. As always, again, as always, the actual results in people's lives is a matter of individual free choice and therefore fully dependent upon how they respond. Dropping on down a little farther. It's important to understand that there's a very great difference in how these final plagues would be poured out, depending upon which date God would judge was best for the establishment of his kingdom on earth. If these had been poured out on that final prophetic day in May 2012, it would have been such a destructive event and would have so shocked and stunned the world that on the following day, the world would have been ready to listen to God. When Jesus Christ does return, the world will have been made ready to listen to God. And then a little farther down under a section called Seven Last Plagues. As mentioned, the prophetic day God has determined for 2012 as being the first possible date for Christ's coming was a literal one-day period that would have been on Pentecost that year. And I thought about not reading all this again, but I think it's good to do it because as we go through this, we're going to see a little bit more than what we did the time before. And even when you read it, you'll be able to see a little bit more than the time before, and you will not be able to drink everything in all at one time. Going on. For all the reasons being stated in this chapter, God has judged that seven additional years would be granted to mankind before the final stages of the end time should commence, and that Pentecost of 2019 is the day Christ will return to this earth. It will be on that day, he will once again stand upon the Mount of Olives, as Scripture foretells. In making this change, God has also made a change in the duration for which that prophetic day is to be fulfilled. Instead of that period being defined as a literal one-day period as it was before 2012, God is now defining that prophetic day as 50 actual days. And so now we're going to pick up where we'd left off. This is where we left off last time, showing that indeed that this 50 days is from the period of the wave sheaf all the way up to the period of time of Pentecost. On the day that Jesus Christ begins his return to this earth, he will become manifest above the atmosphere of this earth. And after this, God will then begin a process of pouring out those plagues. Rather than pouring all of them out in a single day, God will now do so throughout the period of 50 literal days. Yet just before these physical plagues begin to be poured out, the 144,000 will be resurrected. This event of Christ appearing in the atmosphere above the earth begins in the midst of God's holy days during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It is on the same day when the offering of the wave sheaf should have been performed yearly at the temple, or would have been. This has incredibly awesome significance. Incredible, awesome. Anyway, significance. Hope the editors caught all this. And meaning that has now been added to this timing for Christ's coming, because it now ties together in an awesome manner both the wave sheaf offering during unleavened bread and the offering of the wave loaves on the day of Pentecost. The offering of the wave sheaf in the Old Testament represented Jesus Christ as the first of the first fruits, and the offering of the wave loaves on Pentecost represents the rest of the first fruits of God, the 144,000. Jesus Christ was the first of the first fruits of God, and the 144,000 are the rest of the first fruits of God. Although these are resurrected on the day of the wave sheaf, they will not stand on earth until 50 days later, on the day of Pentecost, along with Jesus Christ. Then, or that Pentecost reveals that they have been fully received of the Father and now established to reign in the kingdom of God on earth from that day forward. This all has very profound meaning in the greater fulfillment of God's great plan of salvation. From the point of that day, which represents when the wave sheaf would have been offered, the seven last plagues can begin to be administered in a completely different manner than had been purposed before in 2012. Now these plagues can be interspersed throughout the entire 50-day period, which they will be. Each of these can also occur at different times, in different areas, with different lengths of duration, and any can be repeated if God so chooses. I don't know about you, but that is awesome. The potential for changing people, the potential for moving people to humility, a power they can't even begin to grasp and comprehend nor fight against, and are willing to start to listen, finally. Incredible. This entire process going on is one of the means whereby God is revealing His desire to extend great mercy to as many people as possible in this final end time. The means of God's intervention and use of these plagues reflects that desire and purpose that He is seeking to work out, whereby a vastly greater number of people can potentially be delivered into the millennium. Though there will still be great suffering and death, that can be reduced mightily throughout this time period if people will only humble themselves before God. God is extending much mercy throughout this process, as people are being offered a far greater opportunity for being saved alive. If they will not be humbled by this process and begin listening to God, then the last of these days will be very strong against those who are destroying the earth, because mankind will be humbled before Christ returns. This entire process, although very catastrophic in nature, is all designed to heighten the potential for mankind to become humbled and then to become motivated with a desire to listen. People must be brought to the point where they will begin to look at themselves realistically and far more truthfully in order to acknowledge great change must take place in themselves. Isn't that amazing that human nature is so hard-hearted, so filled with pride against God, that they will resist Him in such a manner? And yet that's going to exist until the day Christ returns, or stands upon the Mount of Olives, I should state in a better way. Yet again, going on, throughout the administration of these plagues, the level of destruction that will be administered rests solely upon how those who are destroying the earth will respond. If they still will not be humbled, they will simply be destroyed, and that total number could still be in excess of 3.5 billion people. This period of the plagues will be mankind's last opportunity to begin to listen to God. God has been very patient and full of mercy. It is mankind that's refused to listen to Him and is instead bent on his own self-destruction. Continuing on in the section entitled Struck by Incredible Fear. On this day that Christ returns in the atmosphere above the earth, The 144,000. Now, that's the term we use. Obviously, we understand, and it's not spelled out in such a way to become difficult for people. Sometimes we know too much. But basically what's referred to as 144,000 are resurrected at that time. Not everybody. There are going to be people still alive right up to the very end. That's why I marvel at what's written in Thessalonians. Thessalonians there, where it talks about a period of time, 1 Thessalonians, and there are certain ones going to be resurrected first, and those who are yet alive later. We didn't know how much later in some cases. So, hey, interesting. What's going to transpire? What can take place? Now I took my finger away from where I was, and now I'm in trouble. Oh, why did I do that? I think this is approximately, I may be a whole paragraph, I don't know, struck by incredible fear. I'll back up, read the whole paragraph. On this day that Christ returns in the atmosphere above the earth, the 144,000 are resurrected in order for them to be gathered together unto him. So obviously we understand there are a few who are not, those who are yet alive, okay? That event will be visible throughout the entire earth. Within that region, God is going to physically manifest elements of this event that is happening in the spirit realm. Because it's happening in the spirit realm and you can't see spirit. You can't see the 144,000 or the whatever it is, 144 and whatever, 200. Anyway, happening in the spirit realm as Jesus Christ is spirit and the 144,000 who are resurrected to be with him are resurrected as spirit beings. They cannot be seen by mankind except for whatever physical manifestation of this event that God gives. This display from the earth will cause wonder, awe, shock, incredible fear, and panic. Can you imagine all the crazy sci-fis that are out there that people have seen? And some of them just getting bigger and bigger of things they see and how it scares people? They haven't seen anything yet. Truly. Hollywood can't quite get it. It is so intense that the nations who have been at war with one another will stop their fighting. This manifestation will be massive in size with great brilliance and a dancing display of color that runs throughout it. It simply appears and then for a time remains stationary just above the earth's atmosphere as the earth rotates beneath it. People all over the world, incredible. This physical manifestation will appear as it is described in Revelation as it occurs on a spiritual plane, and it appears as a sea of glass that is mingled with fire. From the perspective of people on earth, they are able to see this incredible brilliance that is large in size, but they cannot detect what it is. No instruments can measure the size, mass, or shape that it has because it has none. Not physically. You think that'll scare some people? What would you be like? The scientist telling leaders, we see it, but we can't. Incredible. This in itself creates even greater fear because all that can be detected is simply by human sight. The only thing that most can bring themselves to believe at this point, is that this is an invasion, and many nations will then unite for the sake of what they believe is self-preservation in order to fight against it, especially once the first plague, then the second plague begin to strike. And they're going to be able to know where it's coming from. It's going to be made known to them what is the source, and it's from what has been manifested. Suddenly, World War III takes a back seat as nations now set out to fight against what they can only believe is an invasion. Some will believe it's an alien invasion from another world, and yet others will believe what they are being told is an invasion from the Antichrist. And that creates its own problems. And God has made it very clear that there will be one great church that will be telling them just that. It's the Antichrist. Anyway, we'll stop there. So, you'd like to hear more? No, you've got to wait. There goes the carrot. I'm sorry. Little bits here, just some to digest. But to me, it's exciting to think about the 144,000, or the vast majority of them. I'm using that phrase without getting into technicalities. The world and people who read it aren't going to grasp it anyway, just to have an overview of something that they see in Scripture and to grasp that these are individuals who live through time and they're going to be resurrected. We understand the truth of it, and that's obviously what counts there. The rest of the story, an expression we use concerning God's government being resurrected, knowing that it doesn't mean every single one of them yet. And we don't know how the rest are going to happen. Perhaps as some die, they'll be resurrected. Some will at the very, very close to the very end, I believe, with all my being. And anyway, what an awesome thing that's taking place and how God's going to work with this world. And much more to all this. There's a lot more of chapter 6. I think it is the largest chapter, if I'm not mistaken, by far. So again, exciting times we live in, brethren. And I hope you're moved with all your being. Moved when you see the evil that takes place, how people treat each other, how people think about each other. I think of some of the things we see right now on TV, how nasty human beings can be to each other, how hateful people can be to each other, how cutting people can be, because this is just common. This is just the manifestation of something that happens all the time, day in and day out in business. You bump into it, you see it, you see how people stab each other in the back, people want to get ahead. People who don't like you, people who mistreat each other, so vile, it truly is. And that isn't even counting some of the really atrocious things that take place that people allow, that governments allow,